And now, Forward with Falk. Join Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen as they navigate their way through the political thicket. David, I know you've been watching the federal government's takeover of Washington, D.C.'s police force. And I know you've been paying attention to Muriel Bowser, the mayor there, and how she has reacted to what Bondi and Trump are doing. And you have a different strategy, don't you?
Yeah, I do have a different strategy. She's kind of played it not to inflame the situation anymore. Okay? And I, in some ways, you can kind of understand it because the federal government is the, has control over Washington in many ways. But as a political matter, if the Democrats want to have a strategy of confrontation and fighting the Republicans, then there was other things that she, I think, should have done. I'll give you an example. We all knew that Trump was going to have a press conference, and we knew what he was going to say at the press conference and what they were going to do. Now, I think, don't forget, Trump is all about optics and perception. That's the big thing. And it's hard to steal the spotlight from him, but you could do it if you plan it outright. And what I think she should have done was say, Trump is coming on at whatever time it came on. I'm going to have a press conference 30 minutes before or an hour before. And she should have gone out there and said, ladies and gentlemen, we know, the president's going to make some announcements, but we know what he's going to be saying. Number one, he's going to lie a lot. Number two, he's going to be talking in extremist terms, like he always does, and he's going to exaggerate things. Number three, he is going to, he's going to talk about the police and other things, that we need to stop crime, and he's going to use the National Guard as that. But where was he on January 6th with the National Guard when there was a riot going on and Congress was threatened? He wasn't there. So, you can take it for what it's worth. Number four, I think that she could have also used it to point out, the reason that President gets to do this is because Washington, D.C. doesn't have the powers of a state. And we should be a state. We have a larger population than at least two states and almost as large as two other ones. This is what we need, is that Washington should be the 51st state. And lastly, let's not forget that all of this is a diversion from the law and order of Jeffrey Epstein and the fact that there were criminals out who did awful things to girls that are still walking the streets, and he rewarded the chief aider and abettor of that by putting her in a lower, in a very low security prison. Now, I'll be back to talk to you after the press conference of the president. I'm sure I'm going to be telling you that he did all of these things. And if you were really interested as members of the press, you should be asking him about all these things. I mean, that's what I would be mentioning. Maybe, a little bit more polished, but still, that's the way I would I'd be looking at it.
But you can't do that and imagine you're going to have a conciliatory arrangement with this guy.
No, you can't. And, or the alternative is, she could play good cop, bad cop. She could have conciliatory and have someone else or some other member of the Democratic Party. Where's Hakeem Jeffries? He could have gone out and said those things.
He should have. He should have.
He's in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So then let me ask you this. Now, you since you're busy strategizing.
Yeah.
What's
diatribe. A diatribe.
Well, no. This is what I think Democrats should be doing. Yeah. What is your evaluation of the Democratic walkout in Texas? Not so much the walkout as the return or the promised return.
Well, the walkout is also because, you know, there are two houses of the Texas legislature, the Senate and the House. And everybody's been concentrating on the walkout of the House, which deprived the House of a quorum, so they couldn't pass anything. But in the meantime, this week, the Senate did pass the bill. And the reason that they could pass the bill is there were a couple of Democratic stragglers who didn't walk out and deprive the Senate of a quorum.
You mean the Democrats had the ability to deprive each house of the quorum?
Yes.
So why didn't the House do it for 1 week and the Senate do it for another week?
Good question. Nobody's coordinating this. Wow. Nobody's coordinating this. Now, as it turned out, though, the Democrats were able to call attention to this. The public doesn't like all of these shenanigans. Unfortunately, in the larger sense, the distrust of government works against the Democrats. And this is just another example of where the government is dysfunctional and needs to be distrusted. However, the equities were on the Democrat side here. Now, what's going to happen is the Democrats have signaled that they are going to go back to Texas.
You mean the House members?
The House members. They're going to end the boycott, so to speak. However, they got political cover, and the political cover they got was from Gavin Newsom out in California, who has pledged to do whatever he can to set up a counterbalance to what the Republicans are doing in Texas. And in fact, on Friday evening, the California came out with a new proposed map that would functionally give the Democrats five more seats and take five seats in Congress away from the Republicans, and in essence, negate what all the brouhaha is in Texas.
Are there other states that could do what Abbott is doing in Texas for the Republicans?
I think they're going to try to do something more in Florida. They've already had they've reworked their gerrymander, but who knows? Since this is a mid-census gerrymander, you know, there are no rules anymore. The Republicans' only rule is we're going to do whatever we can get away with.
Right. There is a rule. That's a rule.
Yeah. Now, the Democrats have already done Illinois. They can't do anything more in Massachusetts. They got all the congressional seats there. New York, they might be able to work a couple seats, although they had a chance to do it last time and they didn't do it to the max. But, you know, Pennsylvania, it isn't going to happen. I've heard tell of maybe a couple seats in Minnesota, maybe. I don't know. But it's, you know, again, it's going to be all this, you know, back and forth for whatever. And again, as I said, in the macro picture, it breeds people's discontent with government and politics. And that works to the Republicans' advantage.
I don't see why it should lead people to be discontented with government. If the Democrats would say, look, the Republicans have nationalized what up until now has been a federal system. And what they propose to do is to continue on that new novelty, the new political novelty, so that they can get rid once and for all of Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. Because that is what's standing in the way of even more tax cuts for the 1%. And that's what this is all about. And if the Democrats everywhere said that, I don't think people would blame the Democrats for trying to stop that.
Yeah, well, the thing is that the Republicans have already enacted that. So that becomes...
But they can continue and do more and do worse.
Well, they're running into problems because of the size of the deficit. To do more would just create more deficit. And
but that only matters to a certain small number of Republicans. Nobody else cares about the deficit. It doesn't impact.
But they get a talking point. You know, they say your children and grandchildren are going to have to pay this off. And
I know, but that's a fight among the Republicans within their group. That's the Freedom Caucus against the rest of the Republicans. Trump doesn't give a damn about the deficit. He just increased the deficit by $3 trillion.
Oh, he never cared about it in the first...
Exactly. The MAGA movement doesn't care about deficits, except that one part of it, which is the Freedom Caucus, which does care about it. But that's... I can't imagine that people who are considering their health care say, oh, I shouldn't have health care because it's going to be bad for the federal deficit. It's inconceivable that they'll say that.
Yeah, you know, the health care is a top, it's still a top thing that people talk about. It's something that they worry about a lot.
And they should worry about it a lot. Yeah. And it's telling. Did you tell me or did somebody else tell me, sent me a list, the 10 states that have the lowest life expectancy in the United States, each and every one of those 10 states is ruled by a Republican and has been.
Yeah.
The 10 states that have the highest life expectancy, each and every state have been ruled by Democrats and have been. And the difference between the two is 8% greater life expectancy in the Democratic-run states. 8%. That's a lot.
It's a little bit over 5 years.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's a lot. And that's what's at stake. That's what this gerrymandering crap is all about. You want to live 5 years longer, or you'd rather live 5 years shorter? That's what it's about.
And it's not just length of life, it's quality of life.
That's right. That's exactly right.
People understand that if they're healthier, they live longer. And living longer is, they have an easier life at these things. So.
That's right. Yeah. So, I mean, if you translate the everyday life and death experience of people, show that what seems to be an abstract political discussion, an abstract constitutional discussion, an abstract discussion of anything is in fact bread and butter. It's not abstract at all. It means your daily existence, whether you can have children, whether you'll be homeless, whether there's a chance for an education, whether if you had an education, there'd be a job for you. If you had a job, whether you'd be working in conditions that were wiped out in America 80 years ago, but which are being brought back now, where companies are talking about working 12-hour shifts 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Yep. My father came to this country. They were fighting for the 10-hour day. That's in my father's lifetime. And then they got the 10-hour day. And then the 8-hour day. And now they're talking, the employers are talking about going back to the 12-hour day.
Yeah. I was went to a ball game this week, and I was sitting next to a buddy of mine that I met at the ball games. We've sat in the same row for years, and he was telling me that he's like a supervisor on road construction projects and other similar type of things. And he said, you know, they tried to do 12-hour shifts with the, you know, the I guess they worked it out with whatever they did, and they said they just couldn't sustain it. The people just couldn't keep working that long. And even four 10-hour days became problematical, you know, in a week. People just can't, you know, if you're in that kind of work, you just can't do it.
That's right. And plus, you don't need to do it. Why should you do it? Who needs it? They need to get the work done. Hire more workers. There's plenty around. There aren't plenty around. Stop deporting them.
Yep.
And that's another thing that came up this week. Did you see that Mark Zandi, the economist, who's quoted all the time, said that the brouhaha about the government numbers, the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers, the numbers are much worse than what the Republicans are claiming them to be. They're claiming that the numbers are rigged. They don't show the truth. The truth is better. But even what the numbers show is not bad. He points out that the fact that the unemployment rate has stayed more or less at 4%, if you ask the question, why has it stayed more or less at 4%, you discover not because jobs have been created, but rather that workers have been deported. There are fewer workers. So naturally, the unemployment rate is less. And he's that is the key to this whole thing. And that is very bad, threatening news for the economy.
Yeah, well, I already saw something today that the price of vegetables is up like 30-some percent. And I'm sure most or much of that is reflected by the fact that so many agricultural workers have been taken away or afraid to show up type of thing.
That's right. I know that if you go to Wegmans and buy frozen green beans, and you've been paying attention for the last year, you'll discover, you have discovered, that the price has gone up 30% in the last 12 months for green beans. Right. One small item.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I thought you were going to say Zandi said it's worse because people have left the job market, but that's not, the labor participation is still pretty much the same.
Yeah, but there's just fewer workers, right. Fewer people out there to work.
Yeah. And, a lot of these ICE raids are just for show. What did I say? Optics and perception. They went to a press conference of Gavin Newsom and they arrested some guy outside who was selling strawberries.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. The public does not like masked men, pulling people off the street.
No.
Turns out.
And they shouldn't.
That's right.
And they shouldn't. Well, there was some good news for the Democrats in Ohio.
Yes. Yes. Sherrod Brown said he's going to run for the seat that J.D. Vance held until he was elected vice president. And then it was filled by the governor with someone who isn't that well known. Sherrod Brown, probably has pretty close to 100% name recognition in Ohio. The problem with Ohio, of course, is that it keeps getting redder and redder. But every election season has its own qualities. And this time, Donald Trump isn't going to be on the ballot.
Oh, he will be. He will be.
Well, yeah. The question is, does that help or hurt? It helps with the anti-Trump vote. The question is, will the people who he was able to bring out in the last election, who seldom vote or rarely vote or never voted before, were they going to stay with things? And he seems to be already losing popularity among all, every demographic, particularly young people. We'll see.
It's true that Trump has a personal base. There's no doubt about it. And that base is the evangelicals. That's the real base.
Right.
It seems to me that with the task, the strategic, the long-term task of the Democrats is to make Trump the modern Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover was hated, not disliked. He was hated. That's what the Democrats, and for policy reasons, not because he picked his nose, not because he stole money, not because he groped women, not because of any of the things that Trump has been convicted of doing or does without it being criminal, just being crude and uncivilized, but because of policy. And if you wanted to insult someone in the urban environment for 30 years that I knew about growing up, you likened him to Herbert Hoover. And that's what the Democrats have to do to Trump.
Yeah, but Herbert Hoover doesn't work much anymore because...
No, you can't use Hoover, but you have to have that in mind.
People don't remember him, and you know, people are not oriented towards history.
But no, but I'm not saying you. I'm not saying you should say he's like Herbert Hoover. I'm saying the strategist should have that in mind.
Another Herbert.
Exactly. Make him another Hoover, so that Trump becomes a curse word.
Well, unfortunately, though, Trump has built up this populist base who think that, you know, that he's not. They're not capable of hating him like they were Herbert Hoover.
But those people, you're not going to win those people over.
No, that's not the people.
But the young people, the ones you're talking about who are turning against him and who are against him to begin with, the people 18 to 30, to 40 to 45, that's who you have to build this point of view among.
And even among, you know, ethnic groups, same thing as among, he's losing among Hispanics, Asians,
and in that sense, no Democrat should ever say a good word about anything Trump proposes or does. Because, first of all, he's not doing it for a good reason. Even if it has a good aspect, he's doing it to fool people and to get something terrible through. That's why he's doing it. So you should never say anything that he could seize upon and say, well, you see, these people, they support what I'm doing.
Well, he's doing it in order to try to look good. Again, the optics.
Yeah, exactly. So when Hillary Clinton this week said, you know, if he can get Putin to agree to a ceasefire, he should get the Nobel Peace Prize. She shouldn't say that.
Oh, did you see that he tried to hold the Norwegians up for, you know, that he played the tariff card with them, asking for them to give him the Nobel Prize?
What was he going to do, cut their tariff to zero?
Well, he was going to raise their tariffs if they didn't.
You know? I see. Of course, right. But they I don't think they answered.
He desperately wants that because Obama got the Nobel.
Yeah, exactly. Prize. Right.
And he can't have. Oh, by the way, speaking of Obama and George Bush, he moved their portraits in the White House to some stairwell that nobody uses. The pettiness.
He's a petty.
Knows no limit.
That's
he's
right.
A small, you know. And he's surrounded by small men and women.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Stephen Miller.
And women. He got plenty of women who are doing his bidding.
Pam Bondi,
that's right. Now, Hegseth doesn't. Hegseth has managed to fire 10 of the top-ranking women who worked in the defense establishment.
Yeah, he doesn't want women around.
No, but Hegseth belongs to a Christian sect that believes that women shouldn't be citizens.
There was some op-ed in the New York Times this week that talked about that sect about people's right to vote and all of this stuff.
Yeah, it's a religious group that has about 100 churches in its denomination. Hegseth belongs to one of them in Tennessee. They're very political. The guy who organized this said that he doesn't support slavery, but other than that, he thought the Confederate society was an exemplary society and that really most of it should be restored. Of course, there was no Confederate society except slavery.
Right. That was the natural state of what America should be like.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Hegseth believes, and that people shouldn't have the individual right to vote. People should vote by families, and that husband should be the person who decides how the rest of them should vote. In fact, he votes for all of them.
Right.
That's the way they do it in the Taliban-ruled areas in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
That's what he wants. That's the model.
We've talked about that some of these evangelicals are the equivalent of the Taliban.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And
that's the bedrock of the Trump support. Now, you're not going to win those people over. They're the enemy. There are people who are enemies. You can't win them. Yeah. You're fighting them.
Yeah. You know, we can't leave without discussing a couple of things. You know, I mentioned last week that this is the 80th anniversary of VJ Day.
Right, last week.
End of the world. Yeah, this past week. And it was the 90th anniversary of Social Security, which the Republicans, except for a little period during the Eisenhower years, have worked desperately to get rid of.
But the fellow that Trump, the so-called economist from the Heritage Society, who Trump appointed to run the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which, by the way, sounds like a technical organization that doesn't do anything but data, but which decides on how much the Social Security payments are going to be each year, he believes, and has said, Social Security is nothing but a Ponzi scheme. It's going to be out of here in 7 years. The sooner the better. That's the guy responsible for maintaining your payments if you get older.
The 90-year Ponzi scheme. You know,
90-year Ponzi scheme.
Yeah,
right.
Every year it's going to go away, and and it doesn't.
Yeah.
The other thing we have to mention, of course, is what happened in Alaska, or maybe called Baked Alaska, Half-Baked Alaska. You know, it was a half-baked plan to get Putin there, and for Trump to have a great victory, and he certainly didn't. Although I think we were lucky, Alaska's still one of our states. He didn't negotiate away the Aleutian Islands, but
he would have had trouble giving it back, because at the time they bought it, the territory, although they didn't buy this part, but the territory extended all the way to Northern California.
Yeah. Yeah, went all the way down. There was that Russian around the Red River in the California, the Russian
right.
River, whatever
Russian,
it was.
Russian River, right.
Russian River, yeah. But, again, it was supposedly optics. And if you looked at it, Donald Trump did not look good. He looked very tired. He didn't seem to have the energy. And, they held a joint press conference, and press had no part in it.
Well, that makes sense. But I had a conference about the Ukraine. Ukraine had no part in it.
This is true.
So
we're going to learn more, as the week goes on. But this was pretty much a failure. Putin, of course, said that the war never would have happened if Trump had been president, giving a little.
Wait
bit
a minute.
Of a
never mind what Putin said. Trump said he'd finish. He could end this war in one day. It was really easy.
Right. Right.
Well, yeah, how long has he been president? More than one day, right?
Yeah. 6 months, 8 months, seven months.
Yeah, right.
7 months.
Right.
So, but again, it was optics, although these optics backfired on him. So I think we're going to have to worry about what they're going to do, what kind of optics or what kind of outrage they're going to have to come up with this coming week in order to change the focus.
Well, they got to do something, otherwise we get back to Epstein.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. People are starting to forget about Epstein, and the Democrats are going to have to revive it again. Congress is out. That was the whole plan. Dismiss Congress so that we wouldn't be talking about Epstein. There wouldn't be any investigations.
Well, he got Putin. So far, it worked. So far, it worked.
Yeah.
Let's see what happens next week. We're done this week.
We're done this week.
Thank you. See you next
week.
Have
a good week. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward with Falk. Longtime Scranton political observer Dave Falk and WFTE's Jake Rosen discuss politics. Join them again next week, same time, same place.